Hi, welcome to Out of Focus. I'm Shannon Stewart. On today's episode, I sit down with Lauren to hear a story she has never shared publicly before. Lauren grew up as a pastor's kid, deeply rooted in church and in faith, but her journey took some unexpected and heartbreaking turns. For years, she carried a secret that shaped her life, but today, she's breaking the silence. What she shares is raw and powerful, and filled with both pain and hope. And I believe her courage to speak will help so many others find freedom and healing in Jesus. Let's jump into the conversation. Lauren, I am so excited that you are joining me on this podcast. I know you mentioned that you have never shared your story publicly before. It is such an honor that you are sharing it with me and on this podcast. What a redemption story you have.
Thank you. I'm just so honored to be here and to finally tell my story.
And you feel like the Holy Spirit is stirring you up that now is the time, and His time is always perfect.
Yes, He's been really putting it heavy on my heart for the last 2.5-3 years. And I've just been looking for a platform or an individual who understands more of that spiritual side, because it's not about me. It's about what He brought me through, and it's all for Him.
Awesome. Let's kick it off to when you were a child. Can you tell me a little bit about your childhood and growing up as a pastor's kid?
I am a Church of God pastor's child. My whole family is. And I was born into it. And then about 3 years ago, my dad had to retire. He got cancer and was not able to preach anymore. So they left Asheboro, and I'm still here. As a child, I remember just being in church every Sunday morning, every Sunday night, every Wednesday. On Saturdays, I was with my youth group, or I was working at my youth group minister's theater downtown Hickory, North Carolina. And we all worked there. So when we weren't in church, we were working together. So I was a good kid. I never went to a house party in high school. I wasn't allowed to do stuff like that. But I really did not know that side of the world, because all I knew was church.
Did you ever feel pressure as a pastor's kid that you had to meet certain expectations, or you had to be perfect?
Yeah, there would be a lot of times, and we are a jokeable family. We love a good laugh, but people in the church would say, as we moved here, they would say, "You won't believe what I saw Lauren doing." And he says, "Tell me something I don't know." He was like, "We know she's wild." But back when I lived in Hickory, I would go cruising with my girlfriends. That we thought that was the coolest thing, right? And then we would go, and we had to be at home by like 9:30. Yeah, so that was just the type of life I had.
You mentioned to me on the phone that you got sick as a little girl. Can you tell me about that and how God healed you?
Yes. So we were living, Dad was the pastor of Jacksonville Church of God, not far from Camp Lejeune. And we lived there for a good amount of time. And I had received a disease. And it was something that only 2 or 3 cases happened yearly. They don't know how I got it, but I would always play in the woods. We didn't have iPads. We were poor. We didn't really have extra money to go do things. We played in the woods and made forts. And I came home and told Mom I was not feeling very well. And I was the kid who did not want to go to school. But I went to bed. Mom said, "You'll feel better in the morning." And I woke up the next morning, and there was a growth, beet red, that was this thick on my face, all the way around my face. And it was where I could not even breathe. I could not even say anything like I'm doing now without vomiting constantly. And so we eventually went to the doctor, and they knew what it was. And it's called HR purpura. And it's that short term. I don't know how to say the long word, because it's like very long. It's like a whole sentence just for that one purpose. But yeah, they were most definitely saying, "We don't know if she's going to come through this." But my mom and my dad and my family believe in the power of prayer, and they believe in the Spirit. And I am here today because of that.
Amazing. And so He healed you. I remember you saying that they only gave you a few months to live. Is that correct?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a few months to 6 months. I had missed so much school. Mom started homeschooling me just to get me caught up. I was in a real 5-6 years old. I was in a season where I lived in depression at that age because I wanted to interact with other people. So when the school bus would drive by, I'd just be standing there, just staring out the door like, I want to do that. And so a lot had been taken from me at that age. But yeah, it's H.R. Purpura, P-U-R-P-E-R-A.
Wow, I've never heard of that, but I probably couldn't pronounce it either. I can hardly pronounce names in the Bible.
Yes.
I got Zerubbabel, though.
Yes.
Before your life went off track, what did your dream life look like to you?
There was a Christian show in Tennessee that right before I graduated high school, we had, back then you had to record yourself dancing like 3 choreography dances, and you had to sing 3 different types of songs and be recorded. Well, mom's got the home recorder, and I was chosen to go, and they would pay for my stay, and I wanted to be a professional singer. And I was on the way to do that with Church of God here in North Carolina and South Carolina and all those other states. We have a thing called Teen Talent. And I was runner-up against college students at the age of 12. And so I knew that God had put something in my life that I could really go far with. But I decided not to go because of fear. And I decided not to go because I'd never been away from my parents. And just that unknown didn't settle well with me. And so in fear, I pulled away from it. A year later, they pulled my application and reached back out to me, and I still turned it down. That time, I turned it down because of a boy.
I can relate to the fear. I went to a model search, and they wanted me to come to a city, but same thing. I love my family. I was a homebody in that sense, and I couldn't imagine going somewhere and leaving them, but I realize now that I wasn't mature enough, and I wouldn't be able to handle the pressures of the modeling industry, so it was really God's protection upon me.
Yeah. I don't know if that would have been my perspective, just because at the time I didn't have a car and I was like, how am I going to get around? I can't even have a car if I do for the first year on this. And we were going to be riding on cruises and performing on cruise ships and stuff. And it all was just so overwhelming for me.
Wow, that would be, especially that
to
young.
This day, 17 years old. And to this day, I regret every bit of that portion of my life. That's the only thing I regret.
God is a redeemer, so you never know what he has planned. Sometimes we think we missed our opportunity, but he gives us not just second chances, but multiple chances. I love that about him. So when your family moved and things began to change for you, what was that transition like?
From being the good girl to experiencing, I will tell you, relationships. Venturing off thinking that people are nice, and they are, but nice is not always good. And it can lead you down a road of destruction. And that was where it started. And so we had only been here. Okay, so it took me about 4 months, 4 to 5 months. Parents had already moved here. I graduated high school and I decided that I was just going to go to the beach with my friends from high school. And then I went to the beach with some close friends of ours that went to church with us. And I was gone for about 4 months. Yeah. And finally, mom was like, it's time to come home and it's time to figure out how we're going to do this. We lived in a beautiful home in Hickory. So when we moved here, the house was, it was like painted pink walls and orange carpet. And so there was so many things that I'm trying to give you a picture of that just, I did not want to come here. And I had conversations with my mom about that. Have you ever wondered the way I resented trying to come here could have been part of why I went through what I went through? And that's a question I'll always have. I will never have that answer until I get that chance to ask God. But I do believe that God will put some circumstances or situations or put you through things just so that you will lean into him more, so that you will understand that it's not about you, it's about him. So that's how my journey started when I ventured off into relationships. I know when it started, girlfriends of mine said, hey, we're going to this place. And I thought they said a pizza place. I was so silly and young. I didn't know what they were talking about, but this place called Arizona Pete's. And it was a bar. It was a country bar and it was a country club, and I thoroughly enjoyed myself. I didn't really go on the deep end. I went home and I was like, oh my gosh, like we went to this place and I thought it was a pizza place and it wasn't. They had live music and all this. And my mom was like, yeah, okay. She wasn't buying it. She read right through it. But eventually those same individuals kept pulling me because I had so much fun. And then it ended up going from fun to losing control, having no responsibility of my actions, and drinking. And at that time, I had not even experienced drugs, but I was heavily using alcohol in a way. And I wasn't even 21, but they would let us do that there. It was very odd, but I was open to it. I was like, hey, let's do it. That's how I was. I was always the leader of the pack. If the girls said, no, let's go do this, I'm like, what's wrong with y'all? Let's do it. What are you scared of? But that's just who I am. And I don't fear anything. I just go.
Did you feel pressure at first to do what they were doing? Or was it more curiosity because you thought they were having fun and you wanted to have fun too?
It was the curiosity. I love their personalities. Most of those girls are now doing very well. Some are policemen in town, and we have all gathered ourselves up and moved forward and have families and that have beautiful homes, and we have great jobs. Very respectable people, well-known individuals, but I never felt pressured. I was always the one to make the decision for myself.
So were you doing drugs and alcohol every day? Did this become a daily thing that it was an addiction?
That portion did not really start becoming my life daily until I would say a couple of years had passed. So I was 18, 19, 20. And then when I hit 21, it was full-blown drinking because I could. I could go anywhere. The age of 22 is where I really started heavily like partying hard. My voice, because I sing, we would go sing karaoke and we would rip the roof off those places and we would have so much fun. And so that was like my bubble. I put myself in that bubble.
So looking back, were there warning signs you didn't recognize at the time?
I always felt warning signs because I grew up in the pastor's home. Yeah. My brother was the one that would do it behind mom and dad's back. I was the one that would just, I didn't care if you were standing right in front of me. I was going to do it. And we are two different people. And nothing was hid from my parents when it came to those things. But there were things that happened that were very hid from my parents. So no, I always felt that tug at my heart.
Can you tell me about when you started working at the bar and you had an encounter with a specific individual, a certain man?
Yeah, so prior to meeting this person, never met him ever. I was in a relationship, deeply in love, or I thought I was. And so I was young, early 20s, and he broke my heart. And whenever I get hurt, I lash out. So it was almost like I was just looking for someone to give me some attention because I was hurting so much, broken, because he's all I ever knew at that time in my life. I started working at this bar and there was a gentleman, well, not a gentleman, a man who wanted my attention. And for months, I would say 6 months, 6 to 7 months, he would just continue to come in and keep trying to have conversation with me. I never really saw anything bad because it wasn't really done in front of me where I was at. Obviously, I was protected by being in the back end of where I was working. I was behind the shelf and everything. So it wasn't like I really saw the real colors of this person. But there was one night I needed a ride because I didn't have a car. And I don't know why I didn't have my car. I can't even remember that. But I did not. And he offered to give me a ride. There was only been like two or three people left in there. But I broke down my barrier and my wall and did it. And that's when everything changed.
So take me there. You're in this car with him. He's giving you a ride home. What happens next?
We continue to talk and hang out. And never really saw the true colors just yet. It was within a month to a month and a half that it was like I was hooked.
Would you say he was a narcissist? Did he love bomb you or manipulate you, gaslight you? No?
Never. Was very kind. I was one of those thuggish kind of guys where he was like, you're my girl and you're my babe and I will do anything for you and you don't have to ask for anything. It was that. And then as soon as I was hooked and he knew he got me, it's when everything changed and his personality really started to show. Little by little, it was like a little hit here. We would do drugs together. I did not know he was one of the largest drug dealers in the area at the time because he hid it from me. But then as soon as I started to try and move away from this, I don't want this. That's when I started to try and get out is when it was like, you're not going anywhere.
That's when he kidnapped you.
Yeah. Yeah. It was for a good full 6 months that I was interacting with him. The first month and a half was good. We were okay. No fighting. Everything was good. We were having fun. My friends came over. It was just like normal relationships. Everybody was laughing and having a good time. And then all of a sudden, all of my friends stopped coming around. They started noticing things and they left me there, but in good intention for themselves. But it got to the point to where it was, you don't have a daddy anymore. I'm your dad.
Did you move in with him or you were just hanging out with him?
I was hanging out with him, still living with my parents. But then it turned into that first month and a half. I'm like bringing a couple of things open, bringing a couple of things open. Then I had my dog with me. And then all of a sudden it got rough. It got really rough. It turned into physical and mental abuse. And when I say physical abuse, is like choking me into a deep sleep. Or if I did not do what he liked me to do, it was knock me out or punch me or beat me up. And it was a lot. When he would go on his binge rides where he would ride around town and do his little ordeal with drugs and everything, he would make me drive. And when I say this, 2 days ago, God had reminded me of this that I did not tell you on our first call, but it wasn't just drive around for a couple of minutes, go to one place, go home. It was for days. It was for days. There was one time we were on the road for just in our local area, 5 to 6 days in a row, just binging out. And I'm just like so tired. And every time I would try to just rest a little bit, it was like, get up. When I sleep, you sleep. When I'm up, you're up. So I became his tool.
Can you take me to the moment when you realized you were no longer free?
It was right before we had to do all that stuff. I would start hysterically crying because I was just so mentally exhausted. And we were going down the road that his house sat on. And I've never had anyone hit me like that. Like anyone. I don't care if it's my worst enemy that I'm having beef with. I have never had anyone to put their hands on me like that. Yeah. But I knew at that moment I would look out the window and I would just be like, and I had to, it was a game. Okay. So in that world, it's a game. If you know that crying will upset him, then you hysterically laugh to make him happy. Yeah, it was a lot. It was really hard. It's almost like I was acting in reality. Like I had to act to stay safe. I hated myself for allowing it, but I remember asking God, if you're not going to let me out of this, just have him kill me because I can't live like this anymore. And I remember we would do that all the time, until the point I mentally felt like it was my duty to serve him, to stay alive. And there's so many people that ask, why didn't you just run? It's not that easy. It would have been easy if I'd have just listened and I hadn't went down that road, but I did, and it wasn't that easy. And people on the outside cannot see what's going on the inside if they've never been on the inside. And for the longest time, I would just ignore people because of shame. So after we had that altercation, I remember going to the house and I'm sitting on the couch. He's waiting for his mom to come to the house to watch over me so I won't run. She was just as crazy as him.
Wow, I didn't know that part. I know you mentioned on the phone that at night he would handcuff you to the bed and that if he left during the day, he would send people to stay with you, to babysit with you, to make sure that you didn't leave. But I never knew it was the mom.
Yep, it was the mom. She cleaned his house.
Wow.
For drugs. And my daddy, my real daddy, my big daddy, I love him so much. But my dad is one to shower gifts on me and my mom. And every year for Christmas, I would get like a beautiful piece of jewelry. And it was this really pretty cubic zirconia, bright pink, like not a hot pink, but like a light, soft pink. And I had the whole set. And my jewelry was sitting where I put my stuff. And she would be wearing my jewelry. And I couldn't say anything. And the first time I did say something, she had it outside of her t-shirt. And she dropped it inside. And she said, "You don't see anything." And I retaliated. And when I retaliated, I was beat up real bad for questioning it.
By him or by
him, that you don't question my mom. But there was a lot that I lost, not just freedom, but I lost things that were sentimental to me.
You said you lost a bunch of weight during this time because he didn't give you any food.
Yeah, I wasn't allowed to eat. He would eat right in front of me. I was 74 pounds when I left.
I remember you mentioning a piece of bread.
So he had a big fish tank in the back room. There was like a couple of other rooms in the back that were just not being used. It was, they were trying to remodel them. I don't know. But there was a closet. Like you would have the living room and then you would walk through the hallway. And then in the back room, there was like this closet that faced this way. And on this wall, there was a huge fish tank. And he would not buy fish food. He would buy bread and then he would sit a piece of bread on the top of the fish tank and let it crust and get hard. And he would just pinch off pieces at a time and drop it in there. And that's how he fed the fish. It was the only thing I could find to eat. My fingers, I got beautiful nails now, but my fingers were like skin was pulled off. Like you could see the meat of my fingers where I was like constantly trying to eat something because I was starving. And I don't know if anybody that watches this has ever felt that way. But that's where that real mental state kicks in. And it's scary. It's an agony that you just cannot get out of. It's like it's constant hunger. So, yeah, I was 74 pounds and that was the only thing I had.
At this point, it's so dark where you are. You see probably no hope, no light at the end of the tunnel. You mentioned a hymn that you didn't remember singing at church kept coming to your mind. Can you tell me about that hymn?
Yes. So I've sung in church my whole life and we're Church of God and hymns are number one on our list. We intertwine them with newer version songs to keep the old with the new, right? And I remember so many hymns, but I remember every time that he would hit me or attack me. There was this one song that would just be in my heart and I would just hum it. I never really sung it out loud, but I would just sing it in my heart underneath my breath every time. And eventually I realized that every time I sung this song, it was probably about a couple times. And it wasn't like I was like, okay, I need to sing this song to make him stop hitting me. It was like something within me was putting that song in my heart and it was like naturally making me sing. It was pushing it through me. And every time he would stop. And I figured it out. And so it was just the one song that I would just hum for that whole 6 months, that whole 6 months. And I never knew what the words of that song meant, but that song was the hymn of There's Just Something About That Name. And I had no idea what I was singing at the time. I really did not even pay attention to what the words. I wasn't even speaking the words. I was humming the tune of that song. So it really was like a God moment for me. And I had no idea that I was even in a God moment. I thought that I was forgotten and I was lost. I didn't think I was going to make it out.
You not only had this going on, you also said that you encountered demons. What happened and how did you experience firsthand spiritual warfare?
He was in prison prior to me meeting him. And he had three personalities. And the guys in that prison used to make jokes and talk about those three personalities. And so there was a tattoo artist in the prison. I think everyone has one. And they tattooed those spirits of those personalities onto his hand. So they were right on top of his hand. And it was 1.5 weeks or 2 weeks before. It was within that time frame before I left. The room was really dark. And the bed is here. So if I'm sitting on the bed, I'm on the right-hand side looking at the TV. And there was a closet here that anything that I looked good in, okay? I was very plumped. And I was in really beautiful clothing. I loved all of those things. I liked to look nice. But anything that I looked good in that was in that closet was shredded or burned. I was left with one pair of rainbow sandals, a pair of pants, and maybe two shirts. All my jewelry was gone, taken. But in that closet, there's no lamps on, but the moonlight coming through the window. And he's laying beside me. And there was this figure, and I've got a drawing of it. And I tried to find it before this call, but I drew it. And I think it's inside my Bible. I've got two Bibles. I think it's in my other Bible, and I'm going to have to find it for you. But there was this closet, and there was this Reaper figure, like, you know, the hood, no face, long robe with the long cane, that type of figure. I knew what it was. Every time it would come, it played a game with those three spirits. And every time that it would come out of that closet, they would work. When he would go back in, they would turn away from him. They only did what he asked them to do. And every time he would come out of that closet, closer and closer they got to me. And I'm literally losing my mind. Like hyperventilating, can't breathe, so freaking scared. And he can't see it. He can't see anything that I'm obviously not, because they are you. You don't see it because they're you and they're in you and making you blind of it. And that's what I learned as I left. But eventually about 4 or 5 times, and I'm constantly going like this, constantly just like losing my mind. He's like, "You're crazy." I was like, "I'm not crazy. I know what I see. I'm not crazy." And eventually one touched me on my foot and I screamed so loud that I lost my voice. I put my hands on my face and I am screaming, and he finally turns on the lamp and they're gone. But I've never experienced anything like that. But it's real. It's so real. It's not anything to play around with. It's not anything to play around with. And it's frightening to the point to where I was almost about to pass out. That's how scared I was. I don't know if you've ever been scared to the point to where you feel like you're going to just vomit, but that's how that moment felt to me. And I knew that it was those spirits on his hand, because I know what those three spirits stood for. He boasted about it. He thought it was cool. I would always stare at the hand, but I would never like really ask any questions. I didn't really care because I knew it wasn't good. But one looked like a vicious dog. One was a skull with blue flames going through it. And the other one had these lashing teeth. And the one that had the lashing teeth is the one that touched me.
You said at one point he needed more drugs, so he was going to try to sell you. Can you tell me about that story?
So we'd been on the ride for about 3 or 4 days. And at the time, his grandmother was the one giving him a lot of his financial state of support because his grandfather owned an electric company here in town. And so she stopped our money flow. So he had no money. I remember the gentleman that he was having conversations with about doing that. We were both sitting in the car and my window was kind of cracked on this side. It was the only thing that kept me going because I had to have that friction to keep me going. But if the window was up, I was going to pass out at the wheel because I was so tired. He comes over to the door, which I was very frightened over, but he looked at me and he kind of just leaned into the window and he said, "We're not going to touch you. Don't worry. We have no interest in doing this." So that moment, I looked at the guy, and I don't know his name. I've never seen him again ever since. But I whispered with my mouth, "Thank you." But I know who protected me. The spirit intervened in that moment to protect me because these guys were not good guys.
Did his grandma know what he was doing?
They all did.
Is that why they stopped giving him money? Or that wasn't the
one of the reasons? Yeah. She was such a kind woman. I loved her very much. She always was very sweet to me. She never really questioned. He always would only be there to get money from her. And I would always be there because I'm his driver. And she was very brittle. She was very little. And he had a lot of respect for her. There's a lot of trauma that happened in his life that caused him to be the person that he is. Doesn't make it right, but I believe that's why his life is the way it is. That was a scary moment.
Oh, I bet.
I knew that the Holy Spirit had brought me through that. No other person around. These were really vicious, evil people. They're very well known in the drug world in this area.
Can you describe the moment you were rescued and reunited with your parents? I know it involves a title to a car. So can you tell me about that?
Yeah. So he had got a big settlement prior to his grandmother taking the money away from him. He had bought a car. And so stupid us, we put it in my name. So the title and everything was in my name. He couldn't do it because he wasn't allowed. He didn't have a license. So if he wrecked it, it was on me. But I was forced to put the car on my insurance. And one day he started binging out. And when he was starting to binge out, he would start to play games with you mentally and convince you of things that's not true. And one of those things was where he was convinced that I gave that title to someone for drugs. How is that possible? I've not even been able to leave the house. So you see how this is going. Like, I'm sitting here going, I've been in your possession. I couldn't even go to the bathroom without him standing there guarding me.
With binge out, do you mean doing a lot of drugs, getting high?
Long term.
Okay.
On consistency, no sleep, no sleep. And so I looked at him and I was like, how is that possible? I have no way of even talking to anyone. I don't even have a cell phone. You don't even have a house phone. If that was the case, I would have called somebody, right? So he was like, "You're lying to me." And he pulled out a knife and laid me on the ground and put it to my face. And he said, "If you don't tell me what you've done with this title," and the title's sitting in the glove compartment the whole time, he says, "If you don't tell me what you've done with this title, I will slash your face into a million ways that nobody will ever look at you again." As soon as that happened, I mean, it was like right here on my face. It was like a movie in real life, but worse. And I remember him saying, "Well, how about this? Why don't I just call your daddy and tell him to come pick you up?" He picked up the phone and he called my dad.
He had your cell phone, right? That's how he knew the number.
He said, my dad said to him, "Son, I've been waiting for this phone call." He said, "That's the exact prayers we've been putting in place, the spirit to go into that house and find you and release you." And that is, and he blew his transmission trying to get to the house. He had, was on the phone with 911 when, and 911 knew what they were dealing with. And my dad finally got his car there. There was a lot of cops. But I remember I could hear my mom outside. I was in that back closet where that fish tank was. And I remember, because I was just hiding. But I remember my mom having conversation with the policeman, and they were screaming at her, telling her to stand down. And she said, "Do you have a daughter? It's time for you to stand down." She said, "Whatever force is in this house, it's strong enough to hold me back." And so they allowed her to be right there. And my mom walked into the house. I could hear her. And she said, she pointed at him and said, "You sit down now." And he sat down. And when those cops were going through to try to find me, I walked through the house and I could see him glaring at me. And I gathered what little items I had. I had my dog. I had the one pair of pants I had on, the one pair of shoes. I looked terrible. I was beat up, bruised up. And I'm always a daddy's girl. I love my mom. Having my dad see me in that state, I was embarrassed. I was shameful. But I remember trying to get to him, and I collapsed. I had no strength, but I collapsed. And finally, I got in daddy's car. And we got to the end of the driveway, and I remember this cop get out of the car. And I was sitting on the gravel driveway up against dad's tire to his car. He said, "Don't ever come back here," he said, "because you're one of the lucky ones." He said, "I'm just so thankful that we were able to get to you before something bad happened to you." And then that was when I finally was able. I laid in the back seat and I was finally able to just be like, "Thank you." But there was so much growth mentally and physically. So that night we got to my parents, and the sheriff's department was like, "Y'all need to pack a bag, each of you, and you need to go stay somewhere where nobody knows where you're at," because he was that kind. He has no stopping force. He would come unannounced and just do whatever he felt like he wanted to do. And at that time, I got away from him, and he didn't like that. It was a control thing. We stayed at a place in Greensboro. And I laid there and wept the whole night. My mom held me, and I still didn't feel safe, even though I was with my parents. But we had men at the church that sat on the front porch and took shifts. And I'm so thankful for those people. Never underestimate a backcountry woods church. But they took shifts making sure that the home was protected and the church was protected while we had to do what we had to do. And then we went home and finally got ourselves together. And then it was time to go sit with someone to go to court.
Was forgiveness a struggle for you, whether forgiving him, yourself, or even God?
It wasn't God that I was having problems with, because I knew I took credibility for my own actions. I knew that it wasn't all him. Yes, I went through a lot, but I put myself in that position and I should not have. And so I learned to forgive myself, but it took me a while. But I was more vicious after I left. I was just vicious about the way I wanted to react about it. And I wanted to retaliate. And I did for a while. I retaliated by pulling myself from life and pulling myself away from the people that loved me. Continued to do my drinking spurs at the bar and continue to hang around people that were not good people. But at that time, I was at a little bit more of an awareness of who I put myself around. But that went on for another 2.5 years before I could actually fully do that full forgiveness. That's agony, to walk in those steps day by day, angry at someone and angry at myself. It was just shame and guilt. Yeah. And I had to pull myself together. It's been a journey. It's been a long journey. In the sense, although I went through it, I am so thankful that I did.
What did you learn about yourself? What did you learn about God going through that experience?
I learned how strong I am. I learned that the power of the name of Jesus is the only way to break free from something. I learned that the Bible is real. My whole life, I've always read certain scriptures about how in times of life, the Holy Spirit intervenes in ways that works better in the long haul for ourselves, because we can be going through something, or it could be like an immediate harm that's about to hit us, and God like really removes that out of the way through the Holy Spirit. I never really experienced that. I've spoken tongues when I was a kid, and I've experienced the Spirit on that end of the realm, but I've never experienced it to the level that I did when I was in that house. I never experienced that, and I'm the preacher's kid.
Did you go to counseling? How did you eventually get over the shame?
I did not go to counseling. My mom is a very smart, loving individual. And I would have a lot of conversations with her. But as soon as I was ready, a couple of years after that, I moved to Atlanta, Georgia, to live with my brother and sister-in-law and their two kids. And I started becoming a member at Free Chapel Church, which is Jensen Franklin's church, which is where every single one of the my members of my family at this time on my immediate side work at or do some type of service, which is absolutely wild, right? My sister-in-law is the director for the school. My mom is the assistant administrator for the school. My brother was the drummer there, no longer, but he was. My niece is full-blown in the conferences and in children's direction, and she's in the teen youth departments, and they're all working there. But that's the church that I was listening to that song for the very first time when my dad told me about, there's just something about that name. And it's off their album called Echo. It was released the year that I was released from that house. And it's Israel Houghton that is singing it live at their conference. And I remember just bawling in the back seat, and Dad said, do you know what that song means? So I could told Dad what I was experiencing when I was in that house. And he said, he turned the music down and he said, Lauren, the reason why he stopped hitting you is because that the words of that song is talking about the power of the name of Jesus, and that all fear and all evil have to flee when his name is spoken. I said, but I didn't speak his name. I was humming the tune. He said, it doesn't matter. It was connected. And so I recently found out that the Gaithers are the ones that actually wrote that.
You'll have to sing that at church one day.
Yeah.
It would be awesome. Yeah. So tell me about your life now. You're a mother. You're also an amazing photographer. Hopefully one day we get to shoot together. Tell me what's going on in your world now and how God has redeemed it and restored it and completely rewrote it for his glory.
I will start and say that every day we all have struggles. So every day is a fighting battle, no matter what that battle is. It could be mental, physical. It could be whatever that looks like for someone. I struggle daily on things. And so I'm not perfect, but I am now over the U.S. leaves of absence for a company, local manufacturing company. God hasn't released me from it. I love it. I love the people I work with, but no college degree.
Same.
No college degree. And I am a corporate employee that I'm very passionate about what I do. The role that I do, you don't just get in if you don't have some type of degree. So I'm thankful the company saw me as potential and gave me the opportunity. I know I drove them absolutely nuts telling them, I can do this. I can do this. Just give me the opportunity. There's the real Lauren that was shining through in my younger years. And then I've been there 11 years. I'm on a beautiful home with my honey. We have a beautiful family. All my family is healthy. I'm healthy. I have some of the bestest, closest friends I could ever ask for in the wedding industry. God replaced those individuals from the club life and the bar life with new, encouraging individuals that speak life into me when I'm struggling. I never had that. I reunited with my best friend who I was best friends with before I went into that home. And she was one of the ones that saw it. And I actually had a conversation with her the other day about this. And she says, I remember all of that. And she is amazing. So I'm so thankful I have her back in my life. But yeah, I'm a happy person. And I don't live looking over my shoulder anymore. And it feels so good to just laugh about things and have something to look forward to, like photographing beautiful couples and photographing my family and going on beautiful vacations together. And travel has become one of my favorite things in the whole wide world. Going to Lake Como, Italy next month to hang out with one cool individual who's been in my life for a really long time. And yeah, it's up and up from here. I know there's more coming. I'm not asking what it is. I'm just saying, let me be present in the moment and let me experience every moment until I get there, because that's really what we all should be doing anyways. We should be experiencing every moment and really seeing why God has you there. I don't know the real reason why God put me in that situation, but I do know that I've never went back to that situation with anyone. So I believe that God allowed me to experience that.
Sometimes he gives us what we think we want. But even with my story, sometimes he doesn't stop us. He says, okay, here you go. But he's waiting for us on the other side because he's merciful and he's gracious and he's kind and he's our rescuer. So even when we're standing in the rubble of our own mess, he's there waiting to help clean us up and pick us up.
I'm able to witness to a lot of women and men with my leave of absence role. Because I talk to sick people every day. I talk to people who are dealing with domestic violence. I talk to people who are dealing with any type of life event that has shifted them to the left or right, and they don't know where to look. And I have used my journey and my story to give them a little bit more hope, to understand that what they're in is just a season. And we've become really close in the sense that they feel comfort. That's one of the number one things they tell me. They're like, you have given me so much comfort in this season I thought was going to absolutely tear me apart. And we have great friendships because of it. And so that's how I use my story. I even use my story in the midst of when I'm talking to couples. I have couples that meet in their AA groups, and I'm able to hear their story and tell them about mine and tell them that, hey, just because I'm a wedding photographer doesn't mean that I've never went through something like this. Like I go through things too. We are all human. But just seeing the joy that they're going through and then seeing the joy that I go through, and then we all come together and it all mixes well together, and it's beautiful. It really is a beautiful thing to be able to experience on the other side of what was meant to destroy me is now something that I lean on for strength for others. And that's just what the Bible tells us to do, right?
Right. If someone listening to this feels trapped, broken, or beyond hope, what would you want them to know?
That is not the end. That there's so much more on the other side of the fence. It is greener on the other side. And if that individual or individuals are dealing with something or someone that is making them feel like they have no way out, there's always a way out. There's a way in and there's always a way out. And I would just encourage that person, if you don't believe in prayer, start. Even if you don't even know what words to use, it doesn't matter. You don't have to have a 5-star rating prayer. God says, just speak my name and God will show himself.
I've definitely seen the power of prayer, and I can totally relate on not knowing the words to articulate and say, but he can see inside our hearts and he can see the groanings that we can't even utter. And he's just an amazing, majestic, matchless, merciful God. I just love him so much. And I would not be here without him. He is
me either.
Yes. He is my everything and my all in all. And that's one reason why I started this podcast, is because I want people to see that their story isn't done because of some mistake or choice that they made. And your story reminds me of a verse, because you said you got around the wrong crowd to choose your friends wisely, because the way of the wicked will lead you astray. I think sometimes we think that we're strong enough, but as my own personal experience, when I fell, what happened? Without the Holy Spirit empowering each one of us, we're capable of doing the unthinkable. But with his power, we can resist temptation, run from it, flee from it, and be overcomers, because we are more than conquerors through him.
Yes, I agree with everything you just said, but it's just, if those people are dealing with that and they watch this, it's great knowing him on this level. It's not always going to be perfect. It's not always going to be cupcakes and rainbows. It's not always going to be a feel-good moment or feel-good days. But if you lean into him, leaning into him to me is not just reading the Bible. It's going on YouTube and listening to praise and worship albums and worshiping while you're driving down the road. Because sometimes reading is like one of the hardest things to get yourself to do. If you have to download the app that reads the Bible to you, do what you've got to do to push through. And whatever that is, do it for yourself. And that's just the way I've always looked at it. It's a beautiful thing to watch ashes become light.
Beauty! Yes. Beauty for ashes.
I love that song.
I know. So if people want to reach out to you, maybe give you an encouraging word, or maybe they find themselves in a similar situation or trapped, or maybe they're doing drugs and they want help with that, how can they connect with you?
I would say the best way would be my email. So you can, all lowercase, Depuy, it's DEPUY, photography@gmail.com.
Perfect. I really appreciate you sharing your story. I know it was not easy for you, and I know it took great courage. And I just want to thank you for being on my podcast and for sharing something that's been on your heart for almost 14 years.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you.